You can put it up later.
No, I've got a picture of Ashtavakra.
Oh, you so got you it from somewhere. Okay.
You want to show it?
Ah, okay. That can only be conceptual picture. Huh? that is Ashtavakra. Very interesting. Somebody has really thought out and put it. Okay. And we don't know whether he had a mala in hand there, but they have put it to this point. Similarly, the deck also, which is fine. Certain austerities, like keeping fast on Ekadashi day, etc. So these are some of the ways. I think I have covered most of it. This is how you acquire merit. This is the very good impression that is there in the society. And the religious leaders, they promote all this. And they advise people to do one or more of all these things and acquire merit. That is all wonderful. But I have a complaint. My complaint is complaint against whom? Not any particular person. A complaint against the system rather. And I feel that this point is not highlighted by the religious leaders and also people did not make note of it. This is a big mistake. That is, you get merit, equal merit, if not more, by the qualities of heart and head. Did anybody highlight this? Kshama will get you merit. Punyam you will get. You see, you need not tell people, you perform a ritual, some puja, you will get merit. That everybody seems to know very well. And they do it also. But you develop kshama. Kshama, another meaning of kshama is forgiveness. Another meaning of Kshama. Yesterday I talked about one meaning, now I am talking about another meaning. Forgiveness. So, suppose you have that attitude of forgiveness. You see, sometimes you see you have an adversary. Suppose in your life you have an adversary or an opponent or an enemy. These are all shades, various shades of ill will. And so you have an adversary in your life shows that you could not forgive. That's why a person continues to be your adversary, because you could not forgive that person. Suppose you forgive the person, then he is not an adversary anymore. And so this, we fail to forgive people. And we don't know how to forgive. That's why we continue to maintain that ill will or that adversarial attitude towards selected people. For the whole life we do that. So, this is the quality of Duryodhana in Mahabharata. Any number of ways Dharmaraja tries to make friends with him, helps him and protects him in the most difficult situations. Yet Duryodhana refuses to make friends with Dharmaraja. And give 5 villages, we will live our life and you can rule the entire kingdom. He could have accepted it, he doesn't lose anything, but he doesn't accept that also, because for him there is nothing like forgiveness. So Dharmaraja or Bhima etc. have done some injustice to him and he is not willing to forgive at all. That is Duryodhana. Whereas Dharmaraja, Duryodhana has done so much of injustice to Dharmaraja, but Dharmaraja is willing to forgive all of that. Draupadi is not willing to forgive. Bhima is not willing to forgive. But Dharmaraja is not only willing to forgive, he has already forgiven. Now, so this forgiveness, you see, there is a prayer. The prayer is, O God, I forgive all my opponents for whatever wrongs they have done against me. I forgive all of them so that you will forgive my blemishes. How is the prayer? Suppose you readily forgive the other person. Somebody comes and tells me, Swamiji, I am very sorry about it. Sorry about what? About what are you sorry? You tell me. I will accept your sorry, but first you tell me what is that you feel saying sorry for. No, I have done something against you. I don't see anything that you have done against me. But okay, I will accept your sorry, but first tell me what is it that you have done against me. Then he tells something, you have done it against me. I did not notice it. Okay, if you have done it, you have done it. Now you are saying sorry, I accept your sorry. So be happy. So it is not about Swami, just I am demonstrating to you. So the forgiveness should come easy. And suppose you learn to forgive easy. Now will that bring merit or not? Or you have to do only ritual, then only you will get merit. By just forgiving your adversaries, won't you get merit? Now, this point, I consider this is an important issue that I have raised. And this I got from Gita. In Gita 12th chapter, in the Bhakta Lakshanas, one Lakshana after the other, when they are being discussed, Shankara points out, by acquiring some of these qualities of head and heart, when you say it is arjavam, that is the quality of the head, means you understand things very correctly and maintain that congruence. Arjavam is also called congruence. You maintain that congruence, namely, whatever you think, you say the same thing and do the same thing. That is the congruence. This congruence is more the quality of head than the quality of heart. Whereas forgiveness is more the quality of heart than the quality of head. If you use head, you will not be able to forgive. Because the head will tell you how much injustice the other guy has done to you. Therefore, you cannot forgive now. Whereas if you use your heart, you will readily forgive. So, forgiveness, you should practice it. And there is a meditation called Loving Kindness Meditation, which is a gift to the world of Bhagavan Buddha, in which we practice forgiveness. We practice love towards our adversaries. And that is Kshama. If you don't mind, you see, I try to rise above all fragmentary thinking. This is how I look at things. There is a thing called fragmentary thinking. Mane, you divide and oppose that kind of thinking. So, whenever you think in terms of caste, creed, race, religion, that is what is called fragmentary thinking. And as long as you hold on to fragmentary thinking, you will not know the truth. Because in truth, there is no fragmentation. Truth is holistic. So anyway, I was always impressed. I don't know, I could never forget it. And I could never ignore it without mentioning for whatever reason. I was looking at a movie called Ben-Hur. When I was young, I was looking at that movie. Very interesting movie coming from Hollywood, all special effects, this and that. And in that, the Christ was crucified. And while they were crucifying him, he makes a statement, a dialogue. And he says, "O God, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." That is, for the first time I heard it. As a young man, I heard it for the first time. By then I have not read Bible yet. Later I have read Bible. So, it was tremendously stunning it is. Now, how much inspiring, that is a different thing. But it was a stunning thing it is. There were two, three people. They were executing the operation of crucifying a man. He says that, "My God, even now I am stunned even to remember that. What a forgiveness it is." So, an iota of that forgiveness, if we can emulate in our lifetime, you will get infinite merit, I tell you. Now, you get the merit equivalent to 100 big rituals or 1,000 temples, that much merit you will get in the quality of forgiveness, that is the kshama. I will give you an illustration. You see, suppose you take a sword and hit on a stone. The stone, nothing will happen to it. But a line is formed on the stone. Now you tell me, how long will it take for that line to be erased? The stone is left like that. The line will be erased eventually. How long will it take? A million years it will take, right? Or at least 10,000 years it will take. In 10,000 years, due to the wind or water or whatever, the line will be erased and the stone becomes soft again. Suppose you take this sword and hit on sand. A line will form. Beach sand. Go to the beach and hit there. Line will form. How much time will it take for it to get erased? It will be there for the whole day probably. Next day morning you go there, it won't be there. The sand will be covered and it will be erased. Suppose you hit water, a line will form. Water is, there is a thing called surface tension. And water is equivalent to a stretched membrane. That is how water is. This water you see, this water surface, you know, that surface has a tension. Like a stretched membrane has tension, like that surface has a tension, a minute tension. And so, that's why there is a thing called capillary rise. Because of the surface tension, the water rises in the capillary. Anyway, so when you hit with a sword, the surface, it is like a stretched membrane is hit with the sword. So immediately the membrane will break it into two pieces. Like that, water gets separated into two units, this side and that side, on the surface, not in the depth. And by the time you remove the sword, again it comes back. It takes a fraction of a second. You can measure the amount of time it takes also. Some 0.2 seconds or 0.1 second time it will take to cover up that that line, that hit. Suppose you hit the space with the sword. Now, there is no line even in the first place. You don't get a line. And then no line is formed. Now, where do you fit in? When somebody does a wrong to you, or somebody says a wrong thing against you, either with you or with your friend, and so the message comes to you, the friends carry all these messages around you. How much time you will take to forgive that person? Whole life you will not forgive, like a stone. Or you forgive him in a week time, like sand. Or you forgive him within a few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You feel hurt, but you forgive the person. Like maybe water. Or you need not forgive, because you are not even hurt. You instantly forgive, let us say, like space. Where do you fit in? That is the question. It is not easy, I tell you. You have to work on it. A lot of meditation has to be done. People don't understand. They think they study Vedanta. I question it. I don't admit that they study Vedanta. Just because you read a book here and a book there, there is a process called ideation. People do not pay attention to that. There is a process. That process happens with everybody. Unless you are very cautious, you cannot go beyond that. In Vedanta, what happens is you get all the right ideas. And an idea corresponds with a word. Namarupa it is. Rupa is the mental form, that is the idea, not a physical form in this case. So a mental form. And it corresponds with a word. Like Brahma. Immediately the word Brahma, B-R-A-H-M-A, R-A-H-M-A-N, the moment it is uttered, it immediately invokes an idea which you already have about Brahma. The idea could be, the Brahma is the Jagat Karanam Brahma. And now, I am not saying anything against it, that is the right idea. And then if you know a little more Vedanta, it is not any cause, it is Upadana Karana. In Vedanta there is no Nimitta Karana. Vedanta is Upadana Karana only. Upadana Ika Rasikaha Vedantinaha. Unless otherwise mentioned, Karanam is Upadana Karanam only, material cause only. For Nayayikas and Vaisheshikas, the Indian logicians, Karanam mane, unless otherwise mentioned, it is Nimitta Karanam only. They do not have even the word Upadana Karanam. For them, Upadana Karanam, they use the word Samvaya Karanam. Samvaya Karanam, like that they use a different nomenclature. Therefore, Brahma Jagat Karanam, that is Vedanta, means Upadana Karanam only. There is no other cause unless otherwise mentioned in Vedanta. So all that means Brahman is the stuff of which this world is constituted. All this you get, but it's an idea. That is what I am saying. It's an idea that you have acquired. If it is not an idea, and if that is, you have realized it, then you are a liberated soul, now and here. But how come you are not yet liberated, knowing that Brahman is the Jagat Karanam and that Brahman is myself? How did you not get liberated? Because it is at the level of an idea only, ideation. And so, study of Vedanta, when it is reduced to the level of ideation, it doesn't serve any purpose. It has to go beyond ideation. And these qualities of head and heart are a prerequisite to make the Vedanta real to you, to take Vedanta beyond the threshold of ideation. These qualities of head and heart are required. Because in the vision of Vedanta, there is no fragmentation. That is what Vedanta is all about. In spite of the appearance of many, appearance means sensual experience, sensorial experience. That is what appearance is. Suppose you are looking at an object, what means? Already the object has created a sensation in you and the mental form is already invoked and it's an experience. And so, you see a world appears, means you see a world, means you experience the world. And that experience is of the multiplicity and variety, that is the experience is. So, in spite of such an experience of multifarious world, you know that the truth is one, the truth of oneness is known to you. That's why in the vision of Vedanta there is no fragmentation, because the fragmentation which becomes part of our experience is negated and you rise above the fragmentation. Why should you? Because the fragmentation is not real. If the fragmentation is real, how can you transcend it? How can you go beyond that? That is Dvaita. The Dvaita people are like that. For them the fragmentation is real. Therefore the question of going beyond the variety and the duality doesn't arise. They remain dualistic. Whereas for a Vedantin, the fragmentation is only experiential, not existential. It is only experiential, not existential. Existence is one. That is the Brahma. Sat, sadekameva samyedamagra asit ityadi. So to reach that level of oneness, realization of oneness, not that you take the experience of variety and multiplicity as real, but you talk of oneness of the truth, that is what is called ideation. And therefore to go beyond the level of ideation, that is a big threshold it is. Something like in physics and chemistry they talk of an energy threshold. Like that this ideation is a threshold and you have to go beyond that. For that you need the qualities of head and heart. That's why these qualifications, like Viveka, Vairagya, etc. You need these qualities of head and heart. Therefore, you need the quality of Kshama, forgiveness. I have talked about Kshama, again I am talking. Because I am exploring the life. I am not teaching a text, I am exploring life. Text is just sitting there, occasionally I look at it. So, Kshama. So I have talked about three kinds of kshama. The physical, like Shitoshna, and the psychological, the Sukha Dukha, and third, an entirely different meaning for kshama, the forgiveness. You should learn to forgive. So somebody, you see, I have seen a person in the flight, a long flight, you know, long flights across the nowadays. The flights are so long across the ocean, Sapta Sindhu bolte. So seven oceans you cross and come here and go back. Left and right, people will be going east and west all the time. They stopped caring for the cost of the ticket. They stopped caring for the jet lag associated with the trips. They are just at the fall of the hat, they purchase a ticket and go and cross Atlantic and go to Europe and go to India. And then another again the hat is reversed and they come back. I struggle with this and that thing, endlessly I struggle. I wish I have the same energy like some of our friends. Astu. So, this Kshama, Sukha-dukha, and then the forgiveness. So, Kshama, then Arjava, Daya, Tosha. You see, I mentioned this Daya already. You see, in the name of Daya, it is translated as compassion, and further it goes into service and all that. That could be organized, could be part of an organization, or it need not be organization also. It can be done where you are, when you are, and where you are. You can do it in a very spontaneous way. In a very spontaneous way, you can do that. Anyway, I don't want to go into that because some of the ideas that I hold may disturb you. Therefore, so you need to be service oriented, but you need not become part of an organization. You can become, or you need not become also. Don't wait for the organization to come and inspire you to do some service. You can be very spontaneous about it. You see, suppose I come to your door, you give me food, that is a great service. It is not a small thing, it is a big service. And so we have called it bhiksha and put a lot of aura around it. And therefore it doesn't look like service to you, but to me it looks like it is service only. So like that, spontaneously, when and where you are, and whatever occasion comes, don't lose it. And then daya, be nice to elderly people. Old people, elderly people. I don't want to call it old. Old doesn't sound nice. Elderly sounds a bit better. I don't know why. That is how the language is like that. So, elderly people, you don't be very logical about them. Don't apply all your logic to them. Be nice and be helpful. You see, when I sit and take class, I use so much logic and rationale and I encourage all that. But when I interact with a person, particularly an elderly person, I keep all the logic aside. Only love. Never the logic. Only love. And elderly people are everywhere. You need not go to some other country for doing some service to elderly people. They are everywhere. And they could be your parents. And so you can do some service to them. Or they could be in-laws. These parents-in-law, they are no different from parents. Somehow we see a difference that is wrong. They are as good as parents. And suppose parents are no more, then any elderly person is like a father only. He is no different from a father. You see, an elderly person came to our ashram and he stayed there for a month. And I made it a point to do some service to him. And so he was surprised that he is getting this kind of unsolicited service. And he liked it. And he would have missed a few things if this service is not forthcoming. And so I noticed all that, and I went out of my way to do some service to him. And at the end of it, he went back to India. And then he told me, "Hey Swami, you are not a young man, you are also middle-aged and all that at the time. How come you took so much a proactive approach to do this service to me? What could be the reason? I am sitting in your class, you could treat me like any other student. What is so special that you found in me?" Then I told him, "You see, you are like my father in age. And I did not have an opportunity to do some service to my father in those days. Now I see my father in you. That's why I could do that service with love. And I am very happy to say that. He was surprised. And so the point is, where you are, when you are, without waiting, when the occasion presents itself, don't search for an unhappy guy so that you can do some service, unnecessarily. There is so much unhappiness around. In any case, you need not search for it. So, when you come across a deserving person, an unhappy person, a person with some debilitation, so you go out of the way and do some service in a very spontaneous way. That is daya. And then I was talking about tosha, that is where I was. You see, I tell you, you cannot, probably you cannot change your circumstances, but you can always change your attitude towards the circumstances. Suppose somebody is very rich, he is a resident of Toronto, then because he has the riches, he will purchase a building in Florida. Many of our friends in Pennsylvania do that. And they ask me, Swami, why don't you conduct a few classes in Florida also? So therefore what they do when it is cold, so they will have Florida. They go to Florida. And then when the cold is gone and again it is spring or whatever, they come back to Pennsylvania. So they have the wherewithal to change the circumstances because they have money, therefore they do that. Everybody cannot have that. Now suppose I am in Pennsylvania. I don't have enough money to have a dwelling in Florida. So now what should I do? Look at them and become unhappy and be jealous. Well, what should I do? So I tell you, you may not be able to change your circumstances, but you can change your attitude to the circumstances. Therefore, why people go to Florida in winter? Because they have a particular attitude towards winter. Now, you change that attitude. Okay, come one day. You change that attitude towards winter. You make a small place, protected from the wind and other elements, and stay inside and do some meditation. And you need not go to Florida now. So this way, you will not be able to change your circumstances, but your attitudes you can change. And by doing so, that tosha, contentment, that is contentment. In contentment, you change your attitude. And so I always remember Henry Thoreau, the national poet of America. He is a great inspiration to Mahatma Gandhi. For us, Thoreau stands very special because Mahatma Gandhi was inspired by Thoreau. When he was asked, where from you got this inspiration? He said, Thoreau. Now, who is this Thoreau? You have to work to notice him. You know, in that Walden Pond was there, besides that woods are there in Massachusetts, Thoreau is an inspiration even for Emerson also. And there he used to live in a cabin. In the woods, he is alone, all alone. I went to that cabin. Yes, for me it is a pilgrimage. That is how I went. And it was that New England during winter, it is like Canada, very cold it is. And you are walking in the woods and it is bitterly cold it is. And you have to walk on ice, hardened ice. And so you walk and reach there. There is a small wooden cabin. He used to live in that. And during winter, he alone, there is nothing around. The pond is on another side, it is all woods. And without disturbing the woods, how big a cabin you can make? It can only be as small as almost like the platform on which I am sitting. Same length but a little wide. That kind of a cabin it is. In that cabin, somebody used to bring food to him twice a day. He used to make his own tea. And he has a fireplace because it is bitterly cold. And he has his apparatus, not apparatus, So the things which are there in his cabin are the furniture, so a table, a chair, that is all he has. And there is an attic like a small projection on the top of the cabin, and wood pieces are kept there for the fireplace. And so whenever he wants wood, he has to take out them and put in the fireplace. Somebody advised, I will give you a ladder because it is up. He said, I don't need a ladder. Then how will you bring it? I put this chair on this table. First I climb on to the table and then to the chair and pull it up and put all those pieces on the table and then get down from the table, put back the chair downstairs and use the wood. Ladder I don't need. That is an unnecessary addition of furniture to me. So he did not put a ladder there. That was where he lived. Somebody brings food and he reads and writes on the table, chair and a bed and some wood above and a small fireplace. Wooden stove, not fireplace like we people put for decoration, which doesn't serve any purpose. People are crazy, I tell you. What kind of a make-believe it is? It looks like a fireplace with all the iron rod and all that. But you never put any fire in. Why do you need it? No, it looks good. Why should it look good? You must be something aberrational inside to have a decoration like that outside, I tell you. So, you should be, you should be very contented, very down to the earth, contented, and you should not be attached to non-essentials. This is a problem. People, they come for Vedanta. What is Vedanta? Jagat. Jagat Karanam. Abhinnam Nimitta Upadhanam. Wo kya hota hai? Wo Nimitta hota hai, Upadhan hota hai, Abhinnam. Ye kya hai? So this story goes on. And the same story year after year, month after month, the same story. What will you do with the Abhinna Nimitta Upadhana now? Kya karoga isse? You see, Vedanta is life, I tell you. The life that we live from day to day, from hour to hour and minute to minute. You should not be attached to non-essentials. Only the necessary is good. Only the necessary is good. And the most, you please get some of these things, these are laws of life. There is peace only in the essential. In the non-essential, there is no peace, there is agitation. You surround yourself with all kinds of non-essentials, then they all add to your tension. Stress and your concern levels or anxiety levels will increase. You will become anxious with non-essentials. Only essentials are good and only essentials are peace. Non-essentials will bind you and will make you suffer. So, why peace? You cannot realize the truth unless you have that inner peace. You have to work at it. You should have inner peace, the consciousness. Consciousness means the waking consciousness in which you see the world, you experience the world. The consciousness must be very quiet, like a pond. When the weather is quiet, not like a pond when there is a tempest is going on. So when the weather is quiet, how does the pond look like? Placid. And then occasionally there is some small breeze and therefore a ripple a few ripples here and there. And then the breeze varies and the ripples subside. And again some breeze comes and so there are ripples. The consciousness should be like that. Therefore, there is something that you need to see and find it or notice it and respond to it. Therefore, there is movement in the consciousness. Otherwise, the consciousness is at peace. There is no movement. It is peace. This is called natural meditation, sahaja yoga. Natural meditation. Oh, meditation karna hai, okay, sit upright. And now close the eyes slightly. Watch the breath. But my mind is running away. Don't allow it to run away. Pull it back and watch the breath. This is imposed meditation, which you need, which we all need to begin with. But a stage comes when there is a natural meditation. That is Ashtavakra, really. So, it is not a discipline that you have to practice. It becomes natural. You see, some people, for them, cycling or exercising is so natural that they miss it when they don't do it. And when they do it, they don't need to put any effort in it. It comes so natural to them. And so now exercise is such a routine and natural and happy thing to do. Meditation should become like that. That inner peace. And the inner peace can be accomplished only when you are not attached to the non-essentials. So, when you are not attached to the non-essentials, you acquire a quiet mind, which is essential for right perception. And the right perception you should have, right perception. Right perception means, any number of examples can be given. So, like food, you should have right understanding of what kind of food you eat. Like as a Swami, I look at myself. So, suppose somebody offered me a mala made in gold. I was offered. I said, I don't need. I used to have a mala for a while. And then somebody asked for it. I gave it away. And I don't even remember to whom I gave it. And then I did not substitute with another mala. Why so? Because, japa for some time counting. Then the count is over. Now there is no counting. Only japa is there, no counting. Why to count? Why is a counting? Ho gaya. That stage is over. Therefore don't need a mala for japa. No, to decorate in the neck. Now, so they decorate, should I decorate the neck? A lady decorates the neck with a necklace and a Swami decorates the neck with a mala. Kya farak hai? What is the difference between the two? Why should the neck be decorated? What is neck? There is no neck that I am going to take in the next class. There is no neck. That is the next verse is all that only. There is no neck. You are imagining. There is only panchabhutas, that we will come to that. You are imagining, so there is no neck. There is not even body, it is just five elements, which is the kshetra. You are not the kshetra even, you are the one who knows. Now, what is there to decorate now? Okay. Non-essential, you are not attached to non-essential, and there is peace. And so this is the right perception. I gave my own example as an illustration only, nothing more. Because if I start giving your examples, sometimes they may not sound very pleasant and all that. Still I do that. Therefore, so right perception. Right perception all the time. Right perception is not easy. Right perception is not easy. Suppose you see, he is my friend, he is my foe. That is not right perception. Then what is right perception? There is no friend, there is no foe, there is only divinity. That is right perception. And the right perception is very essential for self-realization. To know yourself, you need right perception. And therefore, So tosha. Tosha is what you need. So, you see, people have to understand, merely giving up one thing to acquire a better thing, that is not a tyaga. That is not, where is tyaga in it? Not like that. So, you have to give up. You have to give up a particular thing because you see its valuelessness. That is how you have to give up. It is non-essential, valueless, and so you give it up. That is called vairagya. But then tosha and vairagya, they are interconnected. That is a tosha. So being satisfied, being contented, not satisfied, being contented with essentials and with what we have. And so being contented with essentials, paying attention to essentials, and be free from non-essentials, that is very essential, that is very important for realization of the truth. In Indian railways, they put a board, travel light, like that. That we should do in life, to travel light. You see, I have seen some people in the airport, etc., we see all the time. So they bring a carry-on bag. He gives some dimensions and all that. And so they necessarily bring a thing that is slightly bigger than those dimensions. And then it has so many pockets, so fill everything, stuff everything there. And then it is so bulging, you know, like a garbhini Jason. So it is so bulging. And now, you with all your energy, you lift it and you push it into that compartment above, but it is not going. And then you have to push it, you have to push it. Or you have to occupy somebody else's place. You have to enter earlier so that you can push all your things before anybody else will come like that. So, people become anxious like that. So, on the other hand, suppose you travel light. You travel light. Your journey will be very comfortable. All over your journey will be comfortable. So, similarly in life, we should travel. Life is a travel. In fact, it is called pilgrimage. Pilgrim's Progress, there is a book like that, Christian mystic book it is. So, you travel light in life. You need to live in a house, so live in a small house. You need to have some gold, this is the culture thing, therefore have minimum gold. You need to have some dresses, so have a minimum, half a dozen or maybe have two more. Like that. You need to have a pair of chappals, so you have a pair of chappals. Like, maybe one more if you need. Like that, travel light. And travel light because of that inner contentment. Not because of poverty or any such thing. So who is poor? You show me a person who has equipped himself elaborately, and I will show you a poor guy. This is from Thoreau only. Thoreau only. Suppose you look at a person, he wears a very costly dress, and he wears everything costly, 3-4 rings. In India we come across all this craze. Rings, golden rings, and diamonds studded into the rings and all that. And then malas, or golden chain, and costly this, costly that, like that, a person, he is there. He is the poorest guy. He is not rich, he is very poor. So, the idea of tosha, contentment, that one has to discover it, its importance. And then tosha is another meaning is there. Tosha is a cheerfulness. It is different from contentment. And interrelated everything, but cheerfulness. So, generally, people become cheerful when they come across a thing, when they get a thing that they desire, an object that they desire, they become cheerful. You see, I have seen the children, while opening the gift packets, you know, it is elaborately packaged, the gift inside, jo hai, so hai, and it is elaborately packaged, and they go on opening it, and it's an effort, and then they get their gift from inside. And the children, they become very cheerful. So, elders are no different. They also become cheerful when they come into contact with the things that they like. Now, this cheerfulness, which is created by coming into contact with things, and then you come into contact with a person whom you like my son, my daughter, they come and I meet them. Therefore, it's an occasion, festival, and they're so cheerful. That is cheerfulness, when you come into contact with persons. And then cheerfulness in circumstances. Like, suppose election results, the party you like it has won, and therefore you become cheerful. Or you have some travel before you, and the weather is very nice, therefore you become cheerful. Like that circumstances, or in the office you get a promotion, therefore you become cheerful. These three kinds of cheerfulness, when you come into contact with certain things, with certain persons, and certain circumstances, this cheerfulness, which is known to everybody in life, it is short-lived. That is the point. Don't think that I have all described all this to glorify it. This is called avankritya satachedaha. So, I have described all that cheerfulness to tell you that it is worthless. It is short-lived. And it won't stay with you. It will disappear. And therefore, now what happens? You become cheerful and then it is gone. Short-lived it is. And then you have to get one more thing to be cheerful. Or you have to meet one more time your son or daughter to be cheerful. They come and go. All the circumstances, they happen and they are gone. Very short-lived. And therefore, our cheerfulness is also short-lived. And it is not only short-lived, it creates a sense of psychological dependence in us. You don't have freedom now. Because you want to be cheerful, you have to be cheerful, and for the sake of being cheerful, you depend on the outer, on things, on people, and on circumstances. And this kind of a psychological dependence is very painful. And so people are constantly struggling and to become cheerful. Now, That is not a happy situation. That is the opposite of tosha. You see, you want to be cheerful naturally, spontaneously. Another word, which can be explained as for no reason. Can you be cheerful without any reason? Yes, you look so cheerful. Kya hua? Nothing happened. Are there, nothing happened. Still you are so cheerful. Yeah. I too don't know why I am cheerful. I am cheerful, but I don't know why. Now, that is something. That is called tosha. There is a trick to be cheerful. There is a trick. You see, as long as you are attached to persons, then you will be averse to persons also. Why are you averse to your son or daughter? Because you were attached in the first place. Right? It happens like that. First, in the first place you get attached, and then because of that attachment you get aversion. You see, you become averse. You think because of the misbehavior of the other person you became averse. No. You are only finding a scapegoat. You don't know how to understand life. There is aversion in you, not because of the other person. Other person is what he or she is. They are what they are. Human beings are what they are. Everybody is a samsari. Nobody is naturally cheerful. So when the other person is not naturally cheerful, how can he make you more cheerful or less cheerful? It is our folly to get attached. And when we are attached, attachment is psychological dependence. And when you do that, then the opposite will be there. You become averse. That's why between parents and children, it begins with attachment and it eventually moves into aversion. There is no exception to this. No exception. Putradapi dhanabhajam bhitihi sarvatraisha vihita ritihi Shankara Bhagavatpada. So when you accumulate wealth, you are afraid of your son. And because your son will be coveting that wealth. Yes, father has become old, by now he could give it up. He should give up all that wealth to me and he should go and study Vedanta with Swamiji. Why doesn't he do that? Yeah? There is a point there also. So he covets, he and she also. The daughters covet wealth. They covet. Are parents? Let us not covet the wealth of the parents. Let us be satisfied or contented with what we have. The daughters, are they like that? The sons, are they like that? This is a very, very funny world it is. Very toxic world. And therefore, so first you become attached, and out of that you develop aversion. And as long as there is attachment and aversion, you cannot be naturally cheerful. You cannot be cheerful. So, suppose I neutralize the attachment. It is possible to do. You have to work on it. It is not easy. Not easy. Certainly not easy. For family people, grahasthas, even for sannyasi it is difficult. Sannyasis. Sometimes you come across, if you look at the sannyasi a little closely, they seem to have given up everything, but in real terms they don't give up anything. If you dig deep, the skeletons will come out. So they don't give up anything. No, because it is not somebody's fault. I am not fault finding. I am examining the life because this attachment towards son, daughter, etc., it is the toughest thing to overcome. It won't go away. You have to do a lot of tapas really. But it is doable and it should be done. There are no alternatives. So, you will be able to overcome attachment provided you know the value of freedom. People don't know the value of freedom. You see, somebody is performing a ritual. Why he is doing it? Because he sees a value in it. Somebody does charity. Hard earned money, some of it he gives in charity. Why? Because he sees a value in it. Now, when it comes to attachment, I complain or I put a blame at your doorstep that you don't get rid of attachment because it is difficult to get rid of attachment. I agree with that, but more than that, because you don't see the value in the freedom that arises from non-attachment. You don't see the value in freedom. I spent the whole 1.5 hours time in telling you the glory of freedom. What you need is freedom. People, they look for a mantra. No, not mantra. You need freedom. You don't know. And if the mantra helps you to gain freedom, then the mantra has some value. Otherwise, it has no value. whether it is mantra, or religion, or ritual, or some practice, it should give you freedom. You see, suppose I look at my blood test report, and I see there is no sugar. What a freedom it is. Suppose somebody offers me $1 million, and can I exchange my blood report? No, I don't want to. I want this freedom, I don't want $1 million. Somebody sees your blood pressure, it is in perfect shape. Then there is freedom. You should see the value of freedom. Why should you do yogic exercises and pranayama and aerobic exercises? Why should you struggle to do all those things? Because as a result, you will get freedom. Under that freedom, what is its value? What is its worth? Suppose somebody has $1 million to spare, but he has BP and sugar. He comes to me, let us make a deal. He will I will take his BP and sugar, and I will give him my sugarless and BP less situation to him, and in exchange I will get $1 million. Am I willing to make that exchange? No. You keep your million with you. It is not worth the freedom that I experience. Similarly, suppose I am not attached to my son. What a freedom it is. Tremendous freedom. And then only I will know what is love. Till then, I don't even know what is love. As long as you are attached, you don't know what is love. People confuse attachment with love. Attachment is not love. Because there is an acid test. In love, there is no pain. In attachment, there is pain. And now you check yourself. In the relation, do you experience pain? Yes, thoda bahut. Then it is attachment. No, I don't see any pain. God bless you. That is what is called love. Therefore, your natural cheerfulness is veiled or covered up by attachment and aversion. So, you become free from attachment and aversion as much as possible. To that extent, you will be naturally cheerful. Then that is one important method of gaining the tosha, natural cheerfulness. And then there is this paksha pratipaksha should be avoided. Paksha pratipaksha means, it is another name for that is fragmentary thinking. Suppose I say I am Dutch, so that means now I have divided the humanity into Dutch and non-Dutch. And the Dutch becomes Swapaksha, my group. And non-Dutch becomes Parapaksha. You got the words Swapaksha, Parapaksha. Now, religion. So you identify with a religion. And then, you see, in true religion, there will be no identification. If you are a true Hindu, you will not say, I am Hindu and they are all non-Hindus. If you know what is true Christianity, what is it that Christ stands for? What is true Christendom? What is it? Suppose if you know that, then you will not look at humanity as Christians and non-Christians. You are looking at humanity that way only because you don't know the real, true religion. The religion that is practiced by the masses is divisive. And you identify with that. And that is the misfortune. Now, you see, if you want to identify with a religion, you are welcome. This is a free country, it's a democratic country, you are welcome to your religion. But because you are sitting in a Vedanta class, you have to listen to what all I am saying. Because in Vedanta, the divisive is not acceptable. You see, I tell you, I have some experience, and based on what I have studied, scriptures, etc. Scriptures on the religions of the world and the philosophies of the West also, from whatever study I have made, I tell you one thing. Shankara, Sri Krishna, Buddha and Christ, they say the same thing. Essentially, don't look at the frills or the trappings. You look at the essential what they are saying, did they say? It is not different. Therefore, this paksha pratipaksha, and you join one side, take sides, and oppose the other side, you put yourself into that situation, then you will not be cheerful. The cheer will be gone. So, that is the second trick. And then daya, the divine traits, they are daya, which we have seen, and then love, forgiveness, kshama, and generosity, etc. When you cultivate those qualities, they will make you naturally cheerful. A generous person is cheerful naturally, spontaneously. And a forgiving person will remain cheerful. So, that is one thing. Then, these are all the tricks, the thumb rules to have the cheerfulness in oneself. You see, when you pray for your welfare, you cannot be cheerful. Because the prayer for your own welfare itself originates from your self-concern. You are worried about yourself, you are afraid of your life and your welfare, your future. And from that fear or concern, what is called self-concern, you pray. That will not make you cheerful. It will give you some self-satisfaction. There is a thing called self-satisfaction. You see, I tell you, the religions of the world appease people. They just appease people. You see, it is like saying in Christianity, you go and confess with the priest and your sins will be forgiven. That is an appeasement. That's why you just steal your brother's property. Your brother is helpless and so steal all his property and then go to the church and have an appointment with the priest when there is nobody else in the church. And then there is a cubicle inside that you sit and he sits. There is a partition in between and through a hole you tell, "Sir, I have committed a sin." "Oh, is it? Okay, what is the sin?" "I have stolen my brother's property." "Oh, is it? So you repent for it?" "Yes, yes, I am repenting." "Okay, God bless you." And therefore he comes home, he walks away. Now, in Hinduism, the way Hinduism is practiced by people, you go to Kashi or Hrishikesh and take a dip 3 times. Your sins are all washed away. This is how religions appease people. You fall prey to this religious appeasement, you will never grow. Shall I tell you how appeasement works? Putrarthi labhate putran. One who wants multiple sons will get multiple sons. Dhanarthi labhate dhanam. One who wants wealth will get wealth. What is that? It's all appeasement. Did you ever pay attention to this? There is a Lingashtakam. 8 verses about Shivalingam. Lingam, tat pranamami sadashivalingam. Very beautiful. What at the end there? Lingashtakam vidam punyam. This is very sacred, true. If pathe prayata shuchihi, you have to read it after taking bath, etc. with a pure heart, true. So, Kailase ramate shivena saha modate. This person will go to Kailasa And there he will be enjoying life with Shiva, together with Shiva. And just by reciting these eight verses, you go to Kailash. So, it sounds ridiculously simple and appeasing, very appeasing. Because of this appeasement, you think there is a thing called prayer, and so all the prayer falls into these categories. Where is inspiration in that? You should look at your prayers also. The prayers won't make you cheerful. You make the prayer and still remain cheerless only. What could be the reason for that? So, all these prayers are made up prayers, panavati. So you ask me, how do you know? I don't know how do I know, but I know. Suppose I say something now and say this is said by Shakespeare. Suppose you read Shakespeare well, you will be able to say, no, it doesn't look like Shakespeare. Like that. How do you know? Because you have studied Shakespeare, you know it. Similarly, you tell me a prayer, I will tell it's a banavati prayer. It was put together by some of the people in the last 100, 500, 600 years. A medieval type of prayers. Some of these gods and goddesses and some of these worships did not even exist before 500 years. Therefore, they are all put together by people, good-meaning people, there is some value in it. Therefore, the prayer can make you cheerful only in one condition. When the prayer is self-centered and is born out of self-concern, that prayer won't make you cheerful. There is a prayer which will make you cheerful. Like, you pray, in the prayer, there is a genuine wish. That is the prayer. Genuine prayer for the welfare of all. Do that prayer. In fact, not do that prayer. You make your prayer that. Welfare of all. Like, Asatoma Satgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amrutangamaya. That is a prayer. Lift me up from this small, stagnant, pool like me and mine, and make me universal. That is a very inspiring prayer. That is not about welfare of all, but very inspiring prayer. Then there is a prayer. So, sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, that is a prayer. And then also, swastip prajabhyaha, paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha, go brahmane bhyasubhamastu nityam, lokas samastha sukhinaha bhavantu. Then, kale varshatu parjanyaha. I assume that you understand the prayer. Kale varshatu parjanyaha. Suppose it is raining, oh, what a wonderful thing, good rains, and so people will be happy, and you become happy. Prithivi sasya sharani, oh, this year there were good rains, our monsoon was very good. God bless India, because 1.3 billion people have to eat 3 times or 2 times a day, and if we get a good monsoon, the economy will improve. And if economy improves, Narendra Modi ji's job becomes a little easier. And these people, like vultures, they are looking to grab and eat him and throw him off. But these vultures will be kept at a distance if the monsoon is there and if there is a good society, so the economy is good, he will breathe easy. Oh, God bless. And so let the country flourish. This is the prayer. That kind of a prayer. Hare Canada, wonderful country it is. Vishalaha. Very tremendously beautiful place it is. And all these people are wonderful people. May God bless them all. And they have a wonderful health care system. God bless them. So like that, this is how your, this is the prayer. It's so spontaneous and so like welling up of love. That is the prayer. And once you are accustomed to this prayer, you will remain cheerful all your life. I have given you 4 thumb rules for cheerfulness, now the 5th and final. You will be surprised by the time I come out with my 5th thumb rule, you will be surprised. Be prepared. The 5th trick to be cheerful naturally is proper diet. Did you expect it? You did not expect it. That's it. You take proper diet, you don't need any outside circumstance to be fulfilled to remain cheerful. You will naturally be cheerful. Proper diet is jite rase jitam sarva. Once you conquer the taste buds, you have conquered the whole world. And therefore, so to conclude, the cheer, tosha, is disturbed by psychological dependence on perishable things and on persons like mama putraha, mama patni, etc. Gita says all these things. Sri Krishna says, putra dareshu anabhishvangaha. Some such thing he says. Dara putra, dara putra anabhishvangaha. Or maybe something similar to that. So, my son, putra includes daughter. My son, my daughter. And then my spouse. So wife wants to control the husband and husband wants to dominate and possess the wife. These are not the right conditions for natural cheer. And therefore, the psychological dependence on property, etc. Suppose you have psychological dependence on property. One has to work out these things. Means you have a property. And as long as you look at the property and become cheerful. See whether that quality is in you. And so look at my gold watch, gold chain watch and all that and become cheerful. Something like that. So when these things happen, you lose your cheer. When they are not there, that kind of a psychological dependence is not there. There is a natural cheerfulness. And this is the bhakti, this is the true religion. What I am describing is a true religion. This is what true religion is. Certainly not exactly the religion of the masses. One has to follow this kind of a true religion, tosha. Then satyam. So I talked of a meditation. I thought I will do the verse and then do the meditation. So we will come to it. Maybe tomorrow's class we will do it. Satyam. Satyam is truth. There is something to be understood in this satyam. So you see, satyam means you speak the truth. Satyam vada. Like that you know Taittiriya Upanishad. Satyam vada. This satyam vada, you speak the truth, you have to understand it carefully. Suppose you go on speaking whole day, and what all you said is truth only. Now, is that satyam? No. Not like that. Satyam vada, it is a particular kind of mandate, vidhi. It is called prasankhya vidhi. Satyam vada means asatyam ma vada ityartha. Don't speak untruth. Suppose, I know many truths. I have read in New York Times just before coming here. And then before coming from India, I have read all the Indian newspapers. Now, shall I speak all those truths with you now? Till the end of the class, shall I speak all those truths? What will you do on those truths? So, then suppose you question, hey, why are you talking all those things? Then I will say, I am speaking the truth. So what will you do with the truth? So, therefore, Satyam is not speaking the truth. Satyam is not speaking untruth. That is Satyam. Otherwise, suppose that four people are discussing politics for an hour. And why do you waste your energy like that, talk so much, if you say, no, we are speaking the truth? No, that is not how. Suppose you sit and gossip for an hour. Why are you wasting your energy? Means, no, we are, what all we said among themselves is truth only. So that is not the truth. Suppose you discuss about the prices of newly arrived consignment of clothes or some jewelry, etc. You discuss for half an hour. Now there is no untruth in all that, that is all truth only, but that is not what Satyam we are talking about. Anyway, you got the point. So, this is the principle. When only on two occasions you should speak, and not in any other occasion. In India, there are some certain politicians who were described as, they open the mouth only twice. Only on two occasions they open their mouth. One is when they eat food. Second is when they tell a lie. Only on two occasions they open the mouth. So you should have something similar but the opposite. Like you open your mouth and speak only on two occasions. One, by speaking some benefit accrues to you, some advantage is there, some apna, you have to take care of your life also, so some benefit will come to you, you need something and so you speak and so the other person will give it to you, whatever, some benefit will come to you, or you come across a doctor and tell him, sir, my BP is going up, so please help me this way, that way, you have to speak. In that, you are asking for your own personal benefit, you speak. That is one time when you speak. Second time, by your speaking, the other person gets benefit. He will be happy. He will know a few things. You communicate with him and that will make him blessed. So you speak. And then, the only two occasions, other than these two, you don't speak. Now, how is that? It is very useful. You see, one day I was eating food and some gentleman came and sat before me and said, hello, please come, take a food. I was about to say something to him. Something felt like saying, there is a pressure inside. Like pressure cooker pressure. So some pressure to speak is always there with people. So I too felt about to say something. Then immediately I asked him, by saying this, who will benefit? Whether I will benefit or he will benefit? I found neither I will benefit nor he will benefit. There is no benefit for anybody in that speaking. So I kept quiet and I ate my food. It worked well for me. And suppose somebody says hello. So hello, hello, how are you? So can I be of any service to you? Wonderful, you speak. Be nice and be loving, be kind. And help people by speaking. If speaking can make help, then what more you want? If you have to spend some money to help, then sometimes you may be able to do it, sometimes not. But speech can help. There is a vakya from Ramayanam, Valmiki. Vacha dharma mavapnuhi. Very well important quote comes from Sundarkanda. Sita Devi tells Hanuman, hey Hanuman, here is a great opportunity to you to do some great dharma. You know what is the dharma? Speaking. Therefore I request you to go back, carefully leap across the ocean and rush to the place where Rama is there and tell him what all message I gave you. You tell him and you describe to him in vivid detail how I am here, how pathetic my situation is, and how urgently he has to make an effort to save me. Otherwise I will be gone within 2 months. You tell all this to him in vivid detail, you tell him. By the time you finish, describing my situation to Rama, he should not be able to sit anymore. He should get up, take his weapons and collect the army and rush across to save me. He should not rest till he finishes this job of protecting me. So all that you have to accomplish. How you have to accomplish? Only by speaking. Vacha dharmam avapnuhi. You gain dharma by speech. That way the speech should be. If you speak, you should help the other person. Even in a small way, go ahead and speak. I am not suggesting you practice Maunam Vratam from today onwards. No. You see, back in Hyderabad, if the phone rings, suppose I am doing some japam, the phone rings, I stop the japam and answer the phone. Because most of the time I don't answer the phone in any case. I am not around. I don't carry a cell. And so the landline is the only way somebody is sent to contact me. And if I don't purposefully ignore the ring, then that person will be disappointed, whosoever it is. And therefore I go and say hello. And so then I speak. So because speaking is a dharma, maybe somebody is trying to convey a great message to me that will be useful to me. So I will speak. Or maybe by my speaking he will be happy. So I speak. So you have to speak only on two occasions. When it is helpful to the other person, when it is helpful to you. Rest of the time you should not speak. Because speech is one avenue through which that the spiritual energy will be dissipated. You should not speak. When you become silent outwardly, then slowly you will grow into that inner silence. And when you are silent inwardly, the truth will come into its own. You should know this. The truth, the reality, the Atma, the Brahma is just sitting there. And you won't invite it. You won't pull it out with your some trick or technique or whatever. It will come into its own, like sun. You open the window, you remove the curtain, the sun will enter into the room. Similarly, when that ignorance, the curtain of ignorance is taken away, the truth will come into its own. You don't invite it. People talk of, no, I have pramana with me and with that, pakadke leke aunga. So like that they talk. There is some sense in it also. There is a point in all that. But sometimes if you take it literally, you will be trapped also. The truth will come into its own when the veil is removed. So, therefore, satyam. Suppose you speak this way. You speak less and speak very purposefully. And then there is so much peace inside. And in that peace, the truth will come into its own. So let us say the verse and be done with it. Mukti micchasi chetata Vishayan vishavatyaja Kshamarjavadayato shasatyam Piyushavadbhaja. That's one of the most wonderful verses in the Vedantic literature itself. Ashtavakra Gita is like that, and the very first verse. And so we have done some study of that verse. In a way, we have studied the life itself. Now let us say the next verse, where we will start analyzing this verse from tomorrow onwards. Na prithvi na jalam na agnihi na vayur Yaur Nava Bhavan Esham Sakshinam Atmanam Chidrupam Vidhimuktaye Om Purnamadah Purnamidam. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.